things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that.
Right, there's so much that is passed down to their world.
Here we are. You owe me a Coke, my mom would say. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us. This is an espresso kind of day, so we're into our Nespresso today. It's good. I had a great day today. I've had a very busy slash emotional week because we made our big announcement that you and I talked about on Tuesday, and just had a series of meetings and just very long days the last 3 days. And so this morning I told my boys, I said, surprise, Daddy's going to take you to the Hall of Fame. And so we went and hung out and did that this morning, and then I had to come back and do some stuff at the house to get the house ready. And we have a couple of showings tonight. And so, yeah, it's a whirlwind of stuff. So
welcome to calmness.
Yes. How is Joe doing?
Good. Having a good day today.
And does Joe have a topic for tonight?
Oh, I rely on you for, my job is to curveball your topic.
Yes.
Your job is to bring the initial
topic.
Yes,
that's true. Let's talk about espresso.
No. Right. Anything, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, no, it totally could. I think the multitasking side of things is the thing that's freshest in my mind. You know, trying to navigate finishing one season well and dotting I's and crossing T's and passing batons and doing that so that you're not just like, I'm gone and dump. And then the next season is itching for you to get there. You know, as much as I was getting, people saying, oh, we're going to miss you this week, I was also getting inundated with new Facebook friend requests from people in Buffalo saying, can't wait for you to be here. And, you know, there's some of that, like, get to know you side of things, and there's anticipation. And then the team there is like, well, what do we do? Cause they've been in a holding pattern, you know, kind of waiting for this arrival. And so you're like, all right, well, I can't be in two places at once, or can I?
You can.
and then on top of that, packing a house, selling a house, buying a house, I still have to be a husband and a dad, you know, all of those things. And so just very much, I'm like, wow, I thought I was busy before. This is real busy. And then everybody here is like, can we hang out one last time? And I'm like, yes, we're gonna find time for that too, in there. And that honestly is the most life-giving part of all this, is getting those hugs and getting to spend time with people, at least for me. Maybe not for my wife. She probably wants to do a puzzle and stay at home. But yeah. So how does Joe handle the multiverse, the multitasking, all of that? Because you know, a lot of people are very busy, and you hear that excuse from people all the time. Oh, I'm so busy, I can't do that, I'm so busy. And I have often said to people, you know, you have the same amount of time as everybody else. And there's a level of managing time, and we've talked about this before, managing time versus managing energy, and being able to put your best energy into stuff that you need it for, rather than your best energy into stuff that maybe doesn't need it, but you like to do it. And but how does Joe do the multitasking, the multiversing? How does Joe end up in 11 businesses and 6 places at once?
And able to do it every single day,
right,
and still have time to see my family and have
right.
time to do everything that I decide that I want to do. And you're not going to like this because you're the opposite of my personality.
Let's go.
Think about, like, let's just say, take a sleeping bag, right? Uh-huh. And you roll a sleeping bag up super tight and you're like, I got this thing squished down, because sleeping bags are mostly like air and fluff and whatever.
Right.
But then you put the sleeping bag inside like one of those vacuum sealers and it mm-hmm. sucks all the air out. And then you see if it gets smaller than you thought was possible that it could get. So what did you remove? You removed all of the stuff that didn't need to be there, right?
True.
The matter needed to be there, but everything else didn't. So if you have a conversation with me, that conversation could be an hour conversation, or before you have it, you can write down what the conversation has to lead to, and you do that, and then you move on to the next conversation. There's going to be no feel goods. There's going to be flapping of the wings, but you're going to be able to do it because you knew what the priority, what was necessary, and you cut out all the things that weren't.
Okay. So we have
told to, you weren't gonna like it.
We have to cut the crap.
Cut the crap. And suck the air.
It's the name
out
of this episode. Cut the crap, suck the air out of it. That's the way to do it. So if you're looking at multitasking, you're wondering why you don't have any time, cut the crap, suck the air out of it.
Yeah, don't reverse them, because that would suck.
You know, it's funny though. Like I've done the exercise when I was a staff pastor. I did it when I was in college, and I've had staff do that over time, where they write down everything they're doing every 15 minutes. And then they're able to look at it and go, oh my gosh, I waste so much time.
Tons.
And so you look at that when you're saying you don't have time. Well, no, you know, you actually were on your phone an average of 3 hours a day last week. Well, all right, well, maybe I have more time than I think, you know, but those realizations, you know, I can remember when Sam and I were first married and I think we went, I don't know, 6 or 8 months before we did a budget together. We were just kind of like, we joined our bank accounts. We're like, wow, we got so much money in here. We're both working, woo-hoo! No kids, you know? And the first time we sat down to do a budget, we were like, we spent $600 going out to eat last month. Yeah, we were like, holy right? cow. Right. And you don't even realize it because you're like, yeah, you know what? I don't feel like cooking. Let's go get pizza. Let's go wherever. And you're young and you're not thinking about it. You don't have kids to take care of. And at least for us, you know, that was like a huge realization. And I feel like the same way with time, you know, you feel like, wow, I don't have any time for this. Right. When in actuality, if you really, you know, took a step back and looked at how you were spending your time, you'd recognize, no, I probably have tons of time.
Yeah, and there's downsides to this. I mean, clearly, you know, like if somebody comes into my world and they have a 30-minute slice,
right?
Well, when they go 1 minute over that 30-minute slice, that's somebody else's time that they're cutting into because it is so exacting distributed for things I want to do. And so I have to manage people being compliant and, you know, going around an atmosphere that's not, you know, pretty foreign to them.
Yeah, so you keep a very regimented schedule. Yes. How do you manage in church? We would call them like those God moments, those holy interruptions where I wasn't anticipating that today and it just showed up in my world. It took 40 minutes of time, but man, I'm so glad it showed up because it created this opportunity or this relationship. Do you allow those or do you shut those down?
Well, I sort of like invite them in spaces that aren't allocated elsewhere. So it's almost like RSVPing.
Look, God, you can show up.
Right.
You have a 33-minute window from here to here. Okay,
please,
buddy.
Call ahead when you're on your way.
You could send a text. That'd be great. No, but I were being tongue in cheek with that, but I get that because it has to do with posture. It has to do with the way you.
So if I wake up at 5 o'clock 100%. In the morning and I'm in complete silence and I'm open to any irregularities happening, then that's when they visit. They really do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. And because there's always the argument that like when you're so regimented, you can't have any interruptions, but it's, I say it this way, to the worship team and stuff like that. You know, we want you to be so proficient with the piece of music. So if we give you a song, we want you to be able to play it like it is on the album so that when we want to deviate and have some freedom, you guys have the ability to do that.
Learn proper English and then use.
Correct. Slang. Correct. And I think that's true for people with calendar because there's so many people that you hear like, well, if I pack my calendar too tight, well, then what happens if something better comes up? What happens if, you know, I don't have room for whatever? And it's like, no, you don't understand. Like by managing your calendar that way, you're going to create the space for the thing to pop in like you're talking about. I'm creating the space for interruptions. I'm creating the space.
And when you do it long enough, you take some of those lower priority things and you put them in parallel with the priority things. And if something drops out or something changes, then that one just scoots up and your day is filled with everything that you wanted to do.
Yeah. You know, I know that there are seasons for you where you're like, "Ooh, this is a busy season."
Yeah.
How do you balance the, not just the calendar, but the rhythm side of that? Obviously, you know, you're married, you have a kid, you have hobbies, you have, Gus the bus, you have right. stuff that you love. And I know in some seasons it's like, man, I got a ton of freedom to go, but then I've watched Joe put his head down and it's like all business. Like we got to get crap done. So how do you find the ebbs and flows for you?
And okay, so let's just say you got to have some kind of like stern disagreement with your wife about once a year. You've looked and said, that's about right. After you get to the year point and you haven't fought yet, you're like,
let's
we're
go.
Due. Is there anything you want to tell me? Tell me right now. So I wait for a period of total strength. Right. If it's on your terms, you're going to pick when you're healthiest and say, if I'm going to endure something, let's do it at a high. And that way it lasts like this. I'll be able to move on from it and get it out of the way. But if you're in denial and you're like, you know what? Arguments are never going to visit us, or financial strains are never going to visit us. Then you're basically hiding from it. And it's going to visit you when you're probably not at your strongest point. Mm. Do it on your terms and you can invoke it whenever you want.
So you do it on your terms. And so for you, then you're looking at those busy seasons and you're going, you know what? I want to have that busy season during this 6 weeks.
Exactly.
And in order to have it during this 6 weeks, I'm going to do this and this pre and this and this post.
Sometimes I will delay something if it throws enough, you know, stuff out of my disciplines. Like if there's a distraction that's going to come in, I'll delay that distraction until these two things are mature enough that I can get into that new thing. I'm very responsible with the new things that I involve. I may be doing 10 of them at a certain time, but they're all layered in choreography. You know, I brought them in for a reason and they're there where they're at for a reason.
Yeah. So obviously you manage a lot of people. What do you do with people who take time from you versus the person who brings stuff to you, right? We all have people on our team. In church, we're very nice about it. We call them extra grace required people. they need extra time. They need extra sensitivity. They need extra thought in how you're going to speak to them. And then you have those people that just suck the life out of everything. And all of those people are on your team. All of those people need you in some capacity. Some of them are leading things for you. How does Joe navigate that? Because you get into a busy season and you get enough of those, three or four of those end up showing up during a busy season. Right. And you're like, I don't have anything to give you. You need to just go handle that at some level. I don't know. How do you navigate?
So I create orbits around myself, and where I sometimes it's physical barriers where I will put myself in a place where you just don't have access to me. You have to go through a proxy of some kind. Yep. And so like emergency, you get access to me no matter where I'm at, but anything outside an emergency, you have to go through your chain of command.
Do you define emergency?
Yes, for sure.
Cause what is their emergency and what is your emergency might be two different things.
And it's wild. I mean, it's a learning curve for people to understand that, you know, they have to have that. If the boundary is set and you agree to it, you gotta be, it gotta be sacred. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a sign that I've seen outside of some people's offices. It says, "Your poor planning is not my emergency."
Exactly.
And that's so true, because so many people, especially procrastinators, and I love, and you work with a lot of young people. I love millennials. I am a millennial, and this next generation, you know, sometimes they're like, well, you know, this is, I need help with this. And I'm like, well, you wouldn't have had you done this, this, and this. And then you're coming into me 3 days before this is supposed to happen. And it's going to be crappy.
It's frustrating because I tell people, get in their time machine and come back to me 3 days ago. I do not like that.
I had a professor in Bible school that said, there's always hope. It's called next semester. you would come and be like, oh, can I have an extension on my paper? He's like, listen, there's always hope when we have these conversations. You cannot have an extension. The hope is you can take this class again next semester. but you learn those things. And I had a couple of those type of professors. There was one or two at Bible school. I can remember one of my friends did his whole internship for a summer, and you had to do journal entries and all this dialoguing and recording. I mean, it was hundreds of papers worth of paperwork, pages worth of paperwork. And you did, it was like an 8-week internship, and he comes in to turn it in and his computer died and he couldn't find the file, all this sort of stuff. And he's coming in with all these excuses. And the professor so nicely was just like, is this your excuse for your church when you don't have a sermon prepared on Sunday morning? Like, they're coming to you for life. Or when that couple shows up that needs marriage counseling, you're going to be like, well, my computer died and I don't have, like, figure it
suck
out.
Suck it up. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, that's rough. But it's true. Like, for sure. At some level, you know, when we're always looking for a way out, we tend to find a way out. And it's those people that we go, ooh, that stings, that hold our feet to the fire, that make us find a way through.
Yeah, it doesn't happen twice. It really doesn't.
And I love doing this with my kids. So they'll come to me and be like, can you help me with da 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 da? And I'll be like, no, you're going to have to figure it out. And they'll be like, but it's just so hard, or, you know, something with math or whatever. And I don't mind coming alongside with certain things, but I can tell when they're genuinely asking from, hey, I need help understanding this, versus I don't want to do this and I want you to do it for me. Right. And when I get that sense that this is lazy, I'm like, oh, you're going to have to figure that out, buddy. I'm sorry. And they get so mad. But I want that. I want that wrestle, because if I do everything for them, it's no good.
You're just breeding weakness, and then they're going to be dependent on dad.
It's that personal responsibility. Like, it's not my homework. Like, I did homework for many years.
Yep.
Figure it out. Well, I don't know what to do. I'm like, you know how to Google stuff, man? There's the iPad. Go Google something. And it's funny. I don't know if I said this to you. So we're obviously doing a house search in Buffalo, and this is where our kids' brains work. So I think I said it on the last show. Graham said, can we just Google best house in Buffalo and then buy that?
Just that one.
But their brains go to that. But then when it comes to homework, they're like, can you help me with this? I'm like, dude, Google it. Like, seriously, you know, my teacher said all the time, you're never going to carry around a calculator in your pocket. Yes, I am. And guys, you know, it's super funny to watch some of the stuff that the kids will wrestle with. But then you see that played out in the workplace with some of these young adults and even older adults. I mean, that come in and they want everything catered to them and babied. And I'm just like, you know, like, find a way. Like, I don't know. I'm like, well, how are we going to do that? So I'll tell this story. So I was a youth pastor. I had no idea how any of this stuff worked, any of the audio, visual, any of that sort of stuff. Our church was in desperate need of figuring that out. We had one guy who did sound. He spoke very little English and was not good at doing sound. And so pastor was like, can you figure that out? I'm like, I don't know how to speak Spanish, first of all. And second of all, I don't know how to do sound. So like, I'm at deficit and deficit. And I went to my natural skill is people. And so I started recruiting some people that I'm like, hey, you know what? You know, you're kind of tech savvy. You know how to do that on a Mac. Come over here. We're going to figure this out. And I just recruited people. And so then that we went in, we started figuring that out. I started training people on soundboard via YouTube because I didn't know how to do it. And I'm like, here's our soundboard. This is a video on how this works. Watch this. And people started to learn. So then we had this small little team, and that was over the summer. Then we come up to Christmas time. Our church did a living nativity where you have like the animals and like the actors and all that sort of stuff. There's petting zoo, and they do the Christmas story. Somebody reads the Christmas story. It was great. We'd have hundreds of people from our community show up, and we'd do the show in shifts. So you'd have about 200 people that would show up, and then you'd do the 20-minute, you know, reading of the Christmas story with the shepherds would come by with the llamas or whatever, and then the kids could do pony rides and all that stuff. It was a ton of fun. Well, our space that we were doing it in needed lighting of some sort. And so pastor was like, can you figure it out? And, you know, I'm sitting there going, well, what am I allowed to buy? And he was like, nothing. So we went to some like old closet. We're digging. We found these old canned lights. They were like paint cans with like bulbs screwed them. And we made some lights. And then the lights didn't. They wouldn't touch where they needed to touch to turn on. So we found the right size rocks and we duct taped them in there to push it. It was so rigged. We were up till God knows when trying to figure it out. Like 3 days before, we spent a ton of time at church. But ultimately, nobody ever knew that. We had so much fun figuring it out together. Like the camaraderie that Dave and Shelby and a couple of guys built doing that. And we still laugh about that. Like, dude, had someone come over and just like, you know, breathe the wrong way near it, the rocks would have moved and all the lights would have gone out. It was literally held together with duct tape and rocks. Yeah. Cause he's like, I got no budget. There's a closet with a bunch of crap in it. See if you can figure it out. And we figured it out. You know, those are the sort of things though, that kind of, hey, you know what? We got a nickel and a roll of duct tape and we got to make it work. And nobody knew the wiser. Like, it actually looked really good. So, you know, I hate that kind of mentality. And so, yes, well, I'm feeling the crunch of being busy. For me, it's like solution time. Like, how do I do this? You know, how do we sell a house, buy a house? How do I do this? How do I have these meetings? I'm doing a ton of stuff over the phone, text, taking Zoom meetings and stuff like that. And it's working. My wife started working in the midst of all this too. So it's like, you know, throwing more new in that. And so she doesn't have as much time. So today I had to make sure I had a window to help clean and straighten the house and get some stuff done. Cause we got a showing tonight and figuring out. And then I knew I wanted to be here with you. So I'm like, hey, hon, I got to do this. She's got a place to be at 7. So we're going to finish up here. And then I'm, you know, you have to make a way. It's one thing to sit there and be like, oh, I'm so busy. We're going to do it. That's going to be great.
So let me give you some ratios here. So we talk about this whole, you know, sucking the air out of something and squishing it down as far as it will go. So early on, like I kind of knew in the computer business, how much stuff you can get in a day. So when I brought someone new on, I would let them do their own thing, their own way, and wouldn't give them any advice on what to do. And I would gauge sort of not necessarily their work ethic, but their work patterns, like how much practical production work do you get in a day? What would you say in an 8-hour day productivity you would get out of a person without any kind of guidance as to how to get more efficient?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, they probably spend a lot of time doing stuff, but probably not a lot of time getting stuff done. And that's probably the ratio you're talking about. I don't know. That's got to be interesting. What did you find?
50%. They got 4 hours of productive time. And then, so we moved that when we did some consulting with other businesses. we also found that the habits in our office, not computer oriented, are about the same. Walking around, having conversations, going to the water cooler, picking up your phone, doing text, all of that equates down.
Yeah.
8 hour day, you get about 4 hours worth of actual work. Now, so we scooted everything up the plane. We said, let's just see if you wanted to get 100% day, total way of doing it. Take every hour that's reasonable and convert it into something that's productive. What do you think happens at 100%? It's freaking intolerable. You hate the world and all of its existence because it's all about the production.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
You basically feel like you don't want to go to work the next day. Mm-hmm. The absolute sweet spot is 75%, halfway between totally efficient and halfway. But if it is planned inefficiency, where if you take a half hour break, but you don't plan on taking it versus saying, this is my break and I'm going to make sure that every minute of that break is amazing as I can absolutely get, that is the sweet spot for all things mentally and physically. So if you can do that trade-off with your boss or your company, they will be so happy with you. You'll be so healthy and you'll be getting a whole lot of stuff done.
Interesting. You know, and you think about like companies like Google and some of these companies that, you know, they'll do your laundry for you. They provide all this sort of stuff to make it as easy for you to be at work for as long as possible and efficient so that you're not thinking about doing all these things later. I watched a documentary probably 6 months ago, and they were saying about, you know, Google has a laundry service and they have the food service and they'll walk your pet for you and you can bring your pet to work and they have these different pods and stuff. And everything they do is not out of the goodness of their heart. It's out of making you more efficient so that you come and you're not worried about your laundry. We're going to take care of that for you. You're not worried about
in their business. Computer engineers have a markup of about 12,000% on their time of labor.
Wow.
Because they can run these whole systems that are making billions with a staff of 100 people. Let's just say you go manufacturing and you want to make $1 billion. It costs you 100,000 people's labor to do that same thing. So what they're doing for them is pittance on what they're actually making on their labor.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, the documentary is very fascinating. They were talking about productivity and work-life balance and creating these atmospheres where people don't want to go home, so they get more out of them.
It's so easy when you're making that much margin on someone's time. Now.
Sure. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. So when you come to the balance, you're in a consolidation season right now. You're in consolidating. A lot of times, time frees up.
Yes.
How do you not waste it?
I immediately consume it. If I'm going to rip it out of there, I knew how much it cost me in time, and I have something right to put in its place before it gets diluted into the rest of the whatever, the ether.
So Joe decides he's done with Thursday night bowling club or whatever it is. You know, that season's come to an end. He needs something. You're not just canceling Thursday night bowling. You're filling that slot with something.
Exactly. And that's why the metrics are so important. If I don't know what bowling costs me every day, how would I know what to fill it in? It's this vapor that consumes more than it needs to.
So do you spreadsheet all this stuff? I know you do. You're sick. We're going to take up, just stretch your hands towards Joe. We're going to pray for him right now. in that kind of arena though, I was just having a conversation with somebody who was asking about, they mentioned shoes and figuring out how much your shoes cost per day. I'm like, Joe and I had this exact conversation on podcast not that long ago. But you do the same thing even with bowling club or whatever, to use that illustration.
Yeah. And I had this.
So you know that bowling club, you know, it doesn't just cost you $75 and your bowling ball and your bowling shoes. It costs you, you know, 23, you know, 50 an hour or a half hour because I'm making this investment. And so when I relieve that space, I'm looking at the financial return. I'm looking on the emotional return. You have different metrics for those.
Yeah. And silly, I had a conversation with Ryan. He bought sneakers and for school or summer, I don't know, but he paid $80 for them and it's more money in his world. And he thought they were the most expensive purchase ever. And so he was feeling really guilty that he spent so much on sneakers. And I said, here's the thing. This is what I do. Any item that I use every single day, I get to divide it by how much use I get out of it. So you get to decide how long those sneakers last. And then you divide it by how long, if you woke up every day and said, I really like these sneakers, they're worth paying 50 cents today to put them on, then you make the decisions. If it's worth 50 cents every day, then you make the decision. But whiteout. So whiteout is the most expensive thing on the planet if you go per ounce. So every time you do a thing, like the average person pays, you know, $7 for a thing of whiteout, and it lasts them you know, dries out before they've used it. They use it like six times. So it's, you know, a dollar per time with whiteout. Is that worth it? Would you pay a dollar if you're like, hey, friend, can I borrow your whiteout? That'll be a dollar, sir. That kind of a thing.
Yeah. Where if you bought a $50 pair of shoes and you wear them for 250 days, then it's the cheapest thing
in your world. Absolutely.
Less than a quarter a day. Yeah. Interesting. So when you navigate some of those things, how do you measure in the human factor of it all? So like efficiencies are great, but robots are efficient. People are not.
For sure.
So how do you handle the human element, the emotional, all of that? So like, for instance, right now in this season, you know, we have a huge human element here at Bridge of Hope where we're loving on people. There's some people that are very, very sad. Some people are sad and excited, and some people are very excited for us. So we have this full gambit and we're trying to help all of these people process, in this space. And then we have people anticipating us coming and there's a human element there. And so for me, I live in that space. So how does Joe take his efficiency, his ones and zeros and put a human emotion to it and element?
So first is you eliminate negative people, because if I have limited time to spend on people, negative people aren't getting any of my attention. Yep. Now, I have people in my world that need to hear from me a lot, and I have some that could go months without hearing from me. And so that if I feel like I'm neglecting a relationship, I'll put more into it. But it's density of exposure. So I know how long I have to spend with someone before it's just me talking and it's not for a purpose anymore. And a lot of times it's 15 minutes, but I make sure eye contact, density of topic, preparation. I knew what I was going to say. I'm not making up on the fly. And that way they get exactly what they needed out of the conversation, and they don't want more on the other side of it. They feel filled.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I hear that, but I know for me, I find where I will give extra and added time to those things. They always boomerang back. So in the sense of coming to somebody and, you know, I had a meeting, you know, Tuesday night, I thought it would take an hour and ended up taking 2.5. It was long, but it was worth it. Like, it was really good. There were laughs and sad tears and happy tears. Like, it was a whole combination of things. And yeah, could I have efficiently wrapped that meeting up in 1 hour? Absolutely. But that extra time, like now, like, was so worth it. You know, bumped into them on something, was, you know, working with them on another thing, texting back and forth. And it was just like, there was a depth to the text and a depth to the relationship that wouldn't have been there. I could have solved the issue in an hour, but they needed my heart space for an hour and a half. Now, there are other people that I could spend 2.5 hours with and not solve anything. And so I think there's, you know, having the emotional IQ to recognize the difference. But I have found more often than not, extra time and people always comes back.
Yeah. And I just to be fair, like, I'm trying more to be like you than like what I just described here. So what I'm doing is achieving the floor, right? That's it. Yeah. If I get to the point where I'm not dying because of the mathematics, I'm good. And so, you know, sometimes the bare minimum, if that's all I have to spend, I make sure that I'm not suffering casualties because of it.
Yeah. Cause it's so tough. Cause people will look at, you know, just in, you know, pastoring at Bridge of Hope, you know, I have people, over the last 9 years are like, you know, how come, you know, we've never gotten closer, or how come we haven't had dinner at your house? I'm like, well, you know, there's hundreds of people that go to Bridge of Hope. Like, I can't have everybody over for dinner. And you look at that, and then how do you pick who comes into your world and out of your world? And you start looking at that, and then people can get into a comparative mode where, you know, I tell people all the time, compare and compete. You live in defeat.
For sure.
And it's just true. But people's headspace go there. Like, oh, they always spend, well, yeah, we have friends and we have people that we like to spend time with. It's not a bad thing, but you can only cut me so many ways. Like, right. I only have so many hours. And so that's where I want to be more like you, in the sense that, like, man, he's so efficient with some of these things. And yes, I make fun of him for his spreadsheets, but sometimes I'm like, man, maybe if I had a spreadsheet, that would make it so much easier to navigate 300 relationships in that sense.
Yeah. Well, let's just say there wasn't 100. Let's just say there were 5 people. Mm-hmm. It would still be the same dichotomy of who to invite into that space. And those orbits that you set up are not personal. They're not an insulting thing.
Right.
People who aren't close enough to you aren't bad because they didn't get into that closest orbit. If they were in your orbit, it would be disaster. It would be terrible, and it would ruin your effectiveness to be you and do what you do.
That's so true. So when for me, when you have somebody that's higher emotional IQ, and I'm looking at that, and I will pour into people. Sometimes I've learned this, sometimes totally inefficiently. So, you know, I've spent in some cases years, you know, on weekly appointments, pouring in, thinking I'm going to move this person, you know, I'm going to shift them, I'm going to help them. And then you get 2 and 3 years in and you're like, that investment fell on deaf ears. Now, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. You know, I can spiritualize some of that. I can rationalize some of that. But ultimately, I look back at that and be like, man, if I had invested those, whatever, if I'm spending an hour a week, 365, you do that over a 2 year period, you know, it's 600-700 hours. So if I took those 700 hours and invested them in something else, that's where I look at and I go, man, you know, when you hit on some of those, it's awesome. But when you pour in and pour in and pour in and pour in, and then you turn around, and you're like, oh.
Well, if you divided our two things, they'd probably be very similar in outcome. Mm. But mine would feel terrible and yours would feel really good. Yeah,
mine does feel great.
Yeah.
I feel warm and fuzzy on the inside. But it's funny. I bet, probably has the equal amount of disappointment for people.
Absolutely.
Because people, I disappoint people all the time. And I recognize, yeah, I love what Steve Jobs said. He says, you know, if you want to make everybody happy, sell ice cream, don't be a leader. Yeah. You know, because it's just what it boils down to.
And really the difference is, like, the way that I do things is measurable. So when things don't go right, I have stuff to count. Mm. When you say, if you don't drive a line in the sand and help someone for those 3 months, like, you didn't have definition to it to begin with. Yeah. So how do you know it went long or it didn't go long?
Well, and it's tough to put measurables on certain things. So, you know, sometimes you get into a relationship, particularly when you're dealing with people, and there's no measurable on the other end. Like, it's not a quid pro quo. I'm not in this so that you do this. And so if I spend this 6 months, now you're going to do this.
But you can guess, you can say, like, if I do a weight loss program and I know what calories are and I know what deficits I'm going to create in 5 weeks from now, this is where I should be. So that would say, sure, if I'm nowhere near that, then I have to stop and reassess whether or not this is being productive.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, like, for instance, you know, you're trying to help somebody manage their anger, or you're trying to help somebody their marriage or their parenting or whatever it is. And you get into those spaces, or even their ministry effectiveness. Like, sometimes, like, how do you measure your preaching's got better? Like, I can critique certain form and function and, you know, all right, you used less ums and you know, some of those things. But, you know, outcome in that is it's multivariable. Like, people received it just because they use 15 ums. Well, okay, you know, look at the response, and, you know, maybe they were able to do that. You know, some preachers get up there and you're like, wow, this is horrible. And then they're super effective and people follow them. And then other people are very charismatic. They're slick. They're good speakers and nobody follows them anywhere. So you look at that and you go, you know, there's certain variables that, yeah, we can say that's effective or ineffective, but ultimately what's the outcome at the end of this? You know, if I'm helping somebody in their marriage, like, is them staying together the thing, right? Or is it their happiness? And how do you measure levels of happiness? Is it their contentment? Is it their, you know, they're having sex twice a week and they were having no sex at all? Like, where do you, it's interesting trying to define those measurables, because you try and do that in counseling to give goals and stuff.
I would not proceed unless I made a definition of what success looks like. So would be up to the person that I'm doing. And I'm not saying that it's going to be easier in your wheelhouse. Like, no. I'm dealing with things that are more easily countable.
Well, yeah. Like, when you have ones and zeros, I get that. It makes sense. And you can do that in a weight loss program, or you can do that even in preaching. You know, when I was in Bible school, you know, they gave out the sheet and we critiqued everybody's sermons, and then you watched your own and, oh yeah, I said 37 times, you know, or whatever, and you were learning how to do that. But when you get into an arena where you start talking about people and these just intangibles, it's tough to put a one and a zero on it.
So, okay, let's keep going on this, because I feel like this is one of the few impasses that we have in our relationship here. So, okay, let's use somebody not progressing as an employee. You bring on a staff person and they're supposed to be doing X, Y, Z, and you could just see they're struggling, you know, a great deal. Yeah. Would it be an indefinite pursuit for you to help them be in that stage? Or at a certain point, would you release them to go find more happiness in another place? Would you pull the plug at a certain point
and
say either it's them not capable of receiving or you're not capable of giving?
Absolutely. I think there comes a point in that sort of relationship where you recognize either I don't have what you need or you're not understanding what I'm giving. And so either we need a translator to help us move forward, or there has to be some sort of miraculous thing that takes place, or you need to, or maybe you're in the wrong seat on the bus. That would probably be my first move. Sure. Is like, all right, maybe it's just this department, you know, they seem sharp and smart, you know, as long as they're not doing anything to undercut culture or vision or anything sort of like that. And it's just a matter of, hey, we're missing on the expectations. We're missing on maybe some personality. Maybe we're oil and water. Then I'm going, all right, maybe it's a different seat on the bus they need to be on. Right. And I'll probably experiment with that first before I just execute somebody. But
I consider all that dynamics, though. You moving someone around is another level. Like, you would ratchet right. it up. As you're not making progress, or you are, to different things like moving around.
Right,
like,
but I think there's a book I read probably 10 years ago called It by Craig Rochelle, and it has nothing to do with the movie. But the book talks about the X factor that we can't really wrap our heads around. When you walk into certain companies, like, they just have it. Is what he talks right. about. Certain churches you walk into and just like, I don't know, it's just different. Like, it has this X factor to it. And they're doing the same thing, you know, they're selling stuff, all that, but it just feels different. And there's certain leaders when you get around them, certain people that you're just like, wow, not to be whatever. When you talk about political streams, right? We talk about politics quite frequently on here, and it's not a left or a right issue. Regardless of how you feel about Barack Obama's politics, he just has an it factor to him.
Right.
Like, I've never met him. But the way that he presents himself, the way he orates, all of that, it just, you feel something different with him. It's why so many people voted for him, et cetera. You know, not many people feel that way about some of the current leadership and so on. And they don't have that it factor. George W. Bush had an it factor to him. He was warm, and there was just certain things that drew people to him. You may disagree with his politics, but in the same way, you know, when you meet certain celebrities, they say, don't meet your, you know, your heroes. Sure. 'Cause some of them don't have that. They're a persona on a screen. And then some of them you meet and you're like, wow, they're better than I thought, because mm-hmm. they have that it factor. So when I deal with people and you're talking about that, you know, some people you meet them and you're like, okay, you know, they're sharp, they're talented, they're gifted. They just don't have the it factor. Like, they're just missing it. It's the thing that everybody loves about Jed. He has the it factor. He walks sure. in the room, everybody knows he's there.
Right.
And if he goes left, everybody's like, well, what's over on the left? Yep. He just has that about him. I'm sure he had it as a kid. It's one of those things that's almost built in. That's like sure. DNA. And it's fascinating when a leader has that. And especially when someone doesn't realize they have that. It's always special when you can catch it early. But you get a lot of people on your team, and you can get them in places. And some jobs require that it factor. And so you can train somebody to do sales, but then you get a person with an it factor that does sales, and it's over.
Yeah,
you know, like, teach them anything. It, right, know. It just does it. It's funny. I even watch with my own kids. Like, it's almost like a natural talent when it comes to people. Right. Graham just has that. He just lights up the room. He comes in. All of his friends, I've watched him. He's just this magnet. Everybody wants to know what he's doing and where he's going. And I'm like, he doesn't even realize it, but he's got this little it factor to him. And I'm sure that the others have in their own way, but he, when it comes to people particularly, because that's what we're talking about here. And I try and identify that, particularly when it comes to ministry. Ministry is great, and you can learn how to do it. You can learn how to preach. You can plan events, all of that. But when you have that it factor, and people follow you. And so there's that element that you're looking for. And so when you're pouring in a job or whatever, I think there's always that X factor that you have to take into an account. So there might be somebody that has all the gifts, but they don't have that X factor. There's always going to be a space where I'm going, there's right. somebody else that's going to slide in there that has that X factor.
Yeah, and I feel huge. Like you're like a spiritual doctor. Like, when they get to you, they're broken in a way that is different. Like, there's not sure. many people who would be broken that walk in here and get a starting day. You know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure, sure.
Where, so there, again, there's, it's a little bit harder because you're in rehab more.
Right. That's 100% my area. And that's why, you know, I kind of, it's just where my head space is. And it's probably why I have such a tough time when you talk about the ones and the zeros with people, because I've watched people come in totally jacked up and they have that X factor. And then I've watched things line up in their life. And then all of a sudden, all this stuff over here that was all jacked up comes into alignment. And I'm like, whoa, look at what's here. And everybody's like, oh man, you saw the gold underneath all that. You know, I've had a couple people pay very nice compliments the last couple of days, you know, in terms of my preaching and my leadership, and just saying things like, man, like, you know, I was at my lowest and I didn't think anybody, and you saw this in me and gave me an opportunity and all that. And I look at that and I go, well, I saw that there was something here and it was just hidden by all this muck. And I just tried to give you a healthy space to
dust the muck off a little bit.
Yeah. And then you emerged all on your own.
That's right.
And yes, it feels super good to get a pat on the back with that. But ultimately it took time. Like a lot of these, you know, I think to myself like, yeah, well, I spent 40 hours listening to you. I was going to say a word that I don't normally say, complain and pour your guts out and cry and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes I would sit there and be like, are they ever going to get through this? You know, it's been months and months and months. And then that switch will hit and I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't give up on that. But then I equally on the other side, I have plenty of those where I'm like, I can't listen to another thing. Like nothing's going to change for you until you want
to
step up.
Are you able to say that stuff when it's,
It happens on its own. People will come to they'll say things like, well, you know, I'm just not doing this. I feel bad. I feel like I'm wasting your time. They'll make excuses for themselves. Just like I have done multiple times with trainers at the gym or whatever. It's like, you know, you start to feel bad. Cause you're like, well, I'm not getting the results because I keep eating pizza. So I feel bad. I'm kind of wasting your time. And they're always nice on the other, anytime, whatever you need. But in the same way, just like I'm, you know, going to the gym with a physical trainer and then you feel bad because you're really not holding up your end of the bargain. And I've had the same sort of thing happen in terms of, you know, people coming, hey, I want to get better at this. You know, can you coach me through this? And, you know, and I'm going like, all right, I know that you're really not doing anything because, you know, I would be seeing some arc in your narrative and it's just not there, but they'll catch it and they'll give themselves an out usually because it's awkward and
uncomfortable. But I would be the guy that walks up to you and say, hey, you got a marriage counseling coming in. Can you get that wrapped up in 3 hours and then move on to the next one? You'd be like, not a possible thing in this world, right?
No, Cassie
said, Doug, I'm with you. Time to care for people's emotions, helping other process to take time. I add margin to my day knowing there are people close to me who will need my help to processes, and taking the time to process emotions helps give more energy in the long run. And that's those dividends that, you know, if you put into it now down the road. I mean, you get back way more than that.
You do. You always do. I think it was the movie Patch Adams. You ever seen Patch Adams? Sure. Love Patch Adams. You know, and when he's making his big impassioned speech before all of the, you know, stuck up doctors or whatever, and he says, you know, you treat a disease, you win, you lose. You treat a person, you win every time. And it's that sort of mentality that, hey, you know, I'm giving my time and my energy, knowing that, you know, it's going to be 50-50. Some people are going to dive in and succeed and other people aren't. And I'm not sure if it's exactly 50-50, it might be 60-40, might be whatever. But at the end of the day, even the people that fail, if I give them that time and that energy at some level, they may say to somebody down the road, you know what? Pastor really took the time out for me. You should go see him and talk about your issue. And then they send me someone that ends up being, you know, so you get those sort of things. Rick Warren says that you spell love T-I-M-E. And a huge part of what I do is spend a lot of time with people.
And I'll tell you, like, truly believe that there needs to be Dougs in this world. And there also needs to be 100%. Joes in the world, because we're different tool in the tool belt.
100%. I agree with that fully. That's totally true.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate